Okay, so I'm the king of saying people's names wrong and introducing people terrible, but I've got an acclaimed guest today, and I will allow him to introduce himself so this doesn't go awkward from a terrible introduction by me.
Okay.
Well, I was basically saying a lot of words, just basically say, my man, Marty, would you like to introduce yourself and tell people who you are?
Sure. Yeah, this is Marty James. I'm in Napa, California, and I am very honored to be here today on your podcast. I retired from working on a daily newspaper in 2019, the Napa Valley Register, back in 2019. And before that, I was in college, graduated in 1979 from Sacramento State with a degree in journalism, and grew up in the East Bay down in Contra Costa County. Went to San Ramon Valley High School, then Diablo Valley College, and off to Sacramento State. And so here we are about 40 plus years later, and I'm still enjoying writing and covering golf. And I do some freelance writing for Napa Valley College Athletics in Morton Golf in Sacramento. I work for Ken Morton Jr., covering golf for Hagen Oaks Golf Complex, Bing Maloney Golf Complex, William Land Park, Bartley Cavanaugh. Those are all golf courses managed by Morton Golf. And then I also do freelance writing for the Napa Valley Register, and I have a blog that's on medium.com. So I'm not quite ready to give any of this up, and I still love writing and getting out and, you know, helping these clients I have. I'm very honored to help out Morton Golf, Ken Morton Jr., and Napa Valley College Athletics with Jerry Dunlap, the athletic director at Napa Valley College, and then the Napa Valley Register, you know, a great, great newspaper here in the city and county of Napa. So I hope that covers everything right there.
Extensive. So I really appreciate that. And that basically says we have a well-qualified guest. Let's talk to the Fortinet Championship. I used to call it the Safeway Classic before it was the Fry's. What was your general overview of this event from walking the grounds? Like, just subtle observations. I know me being there one day, my observation is not an astute one, but it was Webb Simpson plays very slow. Do you have any observations that stood out to you?
Well, this tournament kicks off the 2021-22 PGA Tour FedEx Cup season. My big takeaway is that this was a great, you know, first year event for the Fortinet Championship. Matt McAvoy, the executive tournament director, his staff, Silverado, the PGA Tour Golf Channel, the volunteers, this community, the field of 156 players led by Max Homa, who won this event. This tournament has a marriage of golf, food, wine, and music. And I thought everything was just a home run all the way around. Great golf, great food and hospitality. I'm not there to consume, you know, wine. I'm there to work and cover this golf tournament. It was and I didn't happen to see the concerts, but Chase Rice, Weezer, and the Wallflowers headlined the concert series. But this was a great first year event for Fortinet Championship, all the way around. Quality golf, quality golf course. Johnny Miller, as one of the owners at Silverado Resort and Spa, you know, his team, you know, all the great people that work at Silverado, Matt Dunmeyer, as the agronomist, Cody Sherrill, the director of golf. They worked so hard to set this golf course up, for scoring, for the challenge that it presents, for, you know, the difficulty of figuring out these greens. And it was, you know, to make a long answer short, you know, this tournament came down to about the last 20 minutes on Sunday. Between 5:30 and 6 o'clock in the afternoon, Max Homa went on a tear, you know, as he overtook Maverick McNealy to win this event. And you know, going into the final round, Maverick McNealy was the co-leader with Jim Canoes. Max Homa was two shots back. Max Homa shot a 7 under par 65, Maverick McNealy shot a 4 under par 68, and these two players just played lights out. You know, it was so exciting to watch this tournament kind of unfold late in the day and in the final round. And you know, Max Homa won this tournament with great shot making. He eagled the par 4 12th hole. He eagled number 16, a par 5. He eagled number 17, a par 4, with great putting, great iron play. And you know, Maverick McNealy had a double bogey on number 17, so there was a three-shot swing right there. And but then he eagled number 18 to finish. So this tournament concluded with a eagle on number 18 by Maverick McNealy to close within one shot of the lead. And it concluded with Max Homa just going on a tear over the last six, seven holes of the day to conclude what was just a great, great tournament all the way around from Thursday to Sunday. It was just so very, very exciting to be out there. And it got a little warm on Sunday, about 82 degrees, but not much in the way of wind. And the key, I think, to the scoring out there on this golf course, Luke, was that you had to keep your ball in play. You had to hit the fairways. You had to hit your targets, on your second shots. You had to play, really well with your short irons, because this is a difficult golf course with smaller greens that have a lot of slope and a lot of speed. And so it was a great week and a great kickoff event to the 21-22 PGA Tour season, and a great start to this Fortinet Championship. They're a first year title sponsor, Fortinet. It's a company out of Sunnyvale that's in cybersecurity systems, and they can be very proud and honored, and as can Silverado and the PGA Tour and Fortinet and all the parties involved in putting this event on.
Well, I think you hit on a lot of good points, and that's why you're a professional. But I think one thing that stood out to me is that the fairways were about as narrow to me as Olympic Club when I walked the grounds at Olympic Club. And they reminded me of TPC Scottsdale to a degree in terms of target golf. You have to really hit, it's not just about putting the ball in the green, it's about hitting certain quadrants of the green. I think that Silverado is basically kind of like golf simulator golf to a certain degree. It's like, can you hit to certain quadrants? Can you put your ball? Because if you remember, Max Homa on the 10th didn't hit a bad drive, but he put himself in a position where there was a tree limb that obstructed his look at the pin. And then he hits the tree, makes bogey, and then kind of the golf gods give him the 12th hole eagle. But it really struck me as this was an approach shot. Like you said, can you keep the ball in play? Can you hit a fairway? But really, if you have a great strokes gained on approach, you are going to do a lot better than the field on this course.
You're right. The players talk about how this is a very, very difficult golf course as far as the narrowness of the fairways, as far as being able to be so, precise with your driving, because there's very narrow windows out there, and it's tree lined, and there's a lot of trees that do come into play. There's very, very, tall oak trees, redwood trees. And so you need to take those out of play if you can shape that golf drive, if you can shape shots, left to right, right to left. And it's a very, this golf course was, put in back in the 1950s. And it's interesting, it's really withstood the test of time, because it still plays difficult, and these are the best players in the world, and they're not tearing it up. They're not going and shooting like 2,500 par out there. And so it's a testament to Robert Trent Jones and Johnny Miller, who redesigned this golf course with his son, Andy Miller. And this golf course, you need to be able to understand the lines on the greens. You have to understand the speed and the pace of the putt and the break that the ball's going to take on these greens. I mean, if you can putt and if you can save par, that's a great score, saving par on these greens, because that ball really travels fast. And And if you can get up and down from some of these fairway or some of these greenside bunkers, and if you can, you know, make birdies, I mean, there were some eagles that were made out here. And so you need to challenge the five pars and get on in two, and you have to be very aggressive, you know, off the tee. But in the 8 years that this tournament has been played here, Stuart Sink last year, when he won the Safeway Open, he shot 21 under par, which is a tournament scoring record. But generally, you know, 17, 18, 19 under par has been the winning score for 72 holes. And it looked like there was going to be a playoff Sunday afternoon, the way these two players, Max Homa and Maverick McNealy, were playing. But McNealy closed with a birdie.
I think it was birdie, double bogey, and then eagle, right?
Yeah, McNealy closed with a birdie, a double bogey, and an eagle for his second runner-up on the tour. And Homa, you know, this was his third win. And what's very interesting, Luke, is that California players, this golf course brings out the very, very best in players from California. So you look at, you know, these two gentlemen, Max Homa from UC Berkeley, Maverick McNealy from Stanford, Cameron Champ, who won this tournament back in 2019 from Sacramento. I think the players from California are used to the weather. They're used to the conditions, the grasses, Poana greens. They're also used to maybe understanding, you know, what kind of clubs to put in their bag and, you know, how to aggressively go after these holes, because it plays, I think, just a little bit longer sometimes, especially in the morning with the fog and the cool overcast and the cooler weather.
So let's talk about the winner, Max Homa. He's kind of a likable social media star. I've walked with his group on Friday for a little bit. His swing stood out to me as the most like golf swing I wanted to emulate. I think that outside of Hideki, he probably had the best tempo of any player I had seen in the field, the way he was swinging it. But he also, what I think is interesting about Max Homa to me, when you look at kind of the narrative of him, is he's a professional athlete, one of the best in the world, but he also embraces being a human being on top of being this elite golfer, which I think more often than not, we have golfers or public figures who are more, we see them like robots who have this ability to do this sporting achievement, we wouldn't be capable of doing it. Whereas Max has a podcast and he's very public. So I think that alone will always make him interesting on top of being a fantastic player.
Yeah, I think you hit on something. He is a fantastic player. To win on this tour, you've got to have an A game and you've got to have that confidence level and you've got to have that trust and belief in your swing, your game. You've got to be mentally tough. You've got to have, you know, that mindset to be able to focus. And, you know, he's now a three-time winner on this tour. And I definitely had my eye on him going into the final round because so many times you see guys come from behind and win. And he's been there and has done this. And he's a great, you know, champion. You know, he's a great, you know, player. He came out of UC Berkeley where he was the NC2A individual champion in 2013. He was the Pac-12 champion in 2013. He was an All-American. You know, he came out of the PGA Tour as a superstar, a rising star in the game of golf. And he really has backed that up. And what he said afterwards is that, you know, wants to win on this tour. He wants to, you know, be able to play, you know, at East Lake, that, you know, the final event of the FedEx Cup playoffs. You know, he wants to be in that, you know, event. And I think this kind of kickstarts his season and gets him moving in that direction. But he played, you know, the best golf, you know, of anybody on Sunday, you know, to shoot that low of a round and to come from behind. And he's a quality person, a great, you know, a gentleman, you know, just all in all, you know, a very humble person and really you know, kind of embraces the moment of being out there, you know, challenging and, you know, putting himself in contention to win. But he really, you know, it's interesting, Luke, because when we were out there walking the golf course, you know, Homa caught everybody by surprise when he eagled the 12th hole with a 95 yard, you know, shot out of the rough. That put him right there in the mix. And then he came back and he just went on a tear. And when he birdied 16 and then he birdied 17, I thought, man, this guy, you know, is really, he wants to win this thing. And, he puts himself in a winner's circle at Silverado that is an all-star list, you know, with Johnny Miller and Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson and Lee Trevino and Dave Stockton and, you know, so many great champions over the years, Kevin Tway and Emiliano Grillo and Stuart Sink and Sangmun Bae and Brendan Steele and so many legendary players. You know, it takes someone with that type of a, you know, with a game like that to be able to hit these narrow fairways and keep that ball running down the fairway, because it's so easy to find the rough out here. The rough wasn't that long, but it's enough to stop the ball and make you play that shot, you know, farther than you want.
I agree. I view Max as a future major winner. I have him on my list. Now let's talk about Maverick McNealy. My big observation is he flights his wedges in very low. That was like the biggest thing I took away from him, other than he's a very good putter. Like, he really brings those wedges in low, and that impressed me, because I've always heard that you're supposed to bring your wedges in low if you're a great player, your long irons high. What will it take for Maverick to kind of shake off this second place finish and find himself the winner of a PGA tournament?
Well, that's a great question. I think that's the $1 million question right there. I think, you know, he talked about how he's been working so very, very hard on his game. You know, after the FedEx Cup playoffs, he has been committing himself to practicing and preparing and, you know, getting his rest and, you know, doing everything necessary to be a contender out here on the PGA Tour. And, you know, he played, I walked with him for the first 9 holes, Luke, and he was 3 under par after 9 holes. I mean, he was on top of the leaderboard. It looked like he was going to win this tournament. It looked like he had everything going that would enable him to win for the first time. You know, he's had a great career so far. This was his 5th time playing at Silverado. He got here on a sponsor invitation when he was at Stanford. He made his PGA Tour debut here, and he's played in this event for 5 years in a row. And to answer your question, you know, when I watched him play those first 9 holes, he didn't make a mistake. He got up and down to save par. He was, you know, 2 putting for par on these greens. He birdied number 5, which is a 5 par, you know, 2 putting from off the green. He birdied number 7, hit the shot of the day on number 7 to within like 2 or 3 feet of the pin from 200 yards away, made that for birdie. Got up and down out of a greenside bunker on number 8, two putted for par, actually 1 putted for par there. And then he birdied number 18 or number 9. He hit a great drive, you know, landed middle of the fairway. His second shot, I think he wanted to be careful on that shot because there's a greenside bunker on the right, so he came up a little bit short, but he got up and down for birdie. And then he was on his way at that point. But that double bogey, that was a weird shot on number 17, because his drive caught an oak tree on the right-hand side and knocked it right down by the cart path, which left him like 250 yards away from the green. So he hit a perfect iron shot from there, but the ball ran off the back of the green and he had trouble getting up and down. So he double bogeyed number 17. But I think it's just, you know, being able to, you know, just shake it off, you know, do whatever you can to kind of put that out of your mind and move on to the next event and just trust your game, trust your shots, trust your game plan, just have trust in, everything you're doing. Second place, gives you a lot of FedEx Cup points and it gives you a great start on this tour. And I think he could be, he's a great young man, great, attitude, great, gentleman, he comes out of Stanford where he was an All-American. He won 12 events at Stanford in his career. So he knows how to win. And I think just getting that first one on the PGA Tour is the biggest one, and I think he's right there. I think it'll happen for him anytime.
Well, I'm a fan of him, and I'll tell you why I'm a fan. I believe, eighth hole, he hit like whatever club he was laying up to the fairway. And he asked the guy behind the marshal that's watching and telling him what direction the ball goes. He asked him to move. And then he actually was like, oh, I'm sorry about, like, he was very polite. Now, like, I saw him at Stonebrae when he was on Corn Ferry and his family's walking with him. And I saw family, or what I assume was family, walking with him on Friday. I like his overall temperament. And he seems like a polite, respectful person who's trying to make the most of his career. I'm very impressed with McNealy's ability to gauge the ball on chips that are buried. I think he's probably one of the best chippers out of a buried lie, because anyone that plays recreational golf, like when the ball is buried, it's very hard to gauge how it's coming out of that lie. And he consistently got it to 2 feet every time I saw him hit those type of shots.
Yep, that's the difference between these players on the PGA Tour, is they have that ability to execute, a shot in those kind of conditions, be able to, they hit down on it, they're elevating that ball in the air, they're getting it where it needs to go, and they really, they just work at this, all the time, it takes something to stay on this tour. You've got to have the points, you've got to be in the standings, you've got to be able to survive and make cuts and, grind and grind and grind. But he's an outstanding person, and I admire him. And he had a lot of support this week from family and friends who were here. It was interesting. The lead I used to cover this final round, I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to write about? And so I said, the UC Berkeley-Stanford rivalry found its way to the North Course at Silverado for the final round of the Fortinet Championship on Sunday. Here was Max Homa from UC Berkeley, and here is Maverick McNealy from Stanford. A rivalry, from the Cal Stanford days playing out on this golf course. And in the gallery, there were Cal people and Stanford people, walking with these two guys. And it's kind of interesting that, that it came down to two Bay Area guys. And Maverick McNealy did play in the Gifford Invitational here for Stanford when he was in college golf. And so they both have some history here at Silverado. And but to get back to your question, Luke, it's all about, and that's another point. A lot of these guys didn't hit every fairway in regulation. There's something to be said for the way they tighten this golf course up and make it super firm, super dry, super fast. And so you've got to really trust your driving out here. And some of them were hitting driving irons and they were hitting hybrids and, fairway metals, off the tees, just to, control the accuracy of their shots. That's very, very key. But I saw him make birdie or eagle on number 9 on, I think it was Friday, when McNealy made eagle on number 9 on Friday. He knocked it in from off the green. But these greens are very, very small and they're very difficult targets to hit. And so you've got to be able to hit a real high shot with a wedge or with a short iron to land it and keep it on that green.
Yeah, I was actually in the group ahead on Friday and I watched Harold Varner come in and I noticed that the the trajectory and the amount of spin they put on the ball when they were hitting into these greens were different than other courses. And I judged that based on the firmness and the conditions that you didn't want to fly it out there because the greens weren't holding or spinning nearly as much. It was almost like Old MacDonald at Bandon Dunes.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was very dry, it was very warm. And late in the day, the greens were getting even more and more firmer. And, you know, I didn't see a lot of guys spinning the ball out there. You know, it was, I think the conditions were very challenging, you know, for scoring. And although, you know, Homa did shoot 7 under par 65, and Mark Leishman shot 65, and Hideki Matsuyama made a run. So these guys went, I think it was Trevor Immelman on Golf Channel said on Saturday night, it's gonna be a sprint to the finish line. And he was so correct, you know, with that analogy and analysis for Golf Channel, that these guys came out of the blocks, you know, really gunning for these flags, and they went after it. And it was exciting to see. That's what you want to see at in the final round is, you know, these guys really, you know, put it out there and go hard, you know, for that championship. And it was just like, as I said earlier, the last 20 to 25 minutes on Sunday was, that was exhilarating to see the quality of shots and the quality of play. I mean, it was just amazing. And it was great to see the galleries there too. They had great galleries. They had great fan support. They had great, you know, it's a great, what do you think of the golf course as far as a spectators course? Do you like the way the golf course sets up for spectators?
For me, I mean, I think I'm probably like one of the weirdest people to ask this, because I always think about if I were to play it and I look at it from an architectural angle. I think that certain holes are spectacular golf holes as a spectator course. I do think there's certain holes where you kind of get lost as a spectator. I'm thinking of like the 7, 8, 9 rooting. It's like, as a spectator, if you're following a group, that little triangle, now you're running back into 10 and it's kind of like no man's land. You're probably going to have to like catch up with the group you're in. I think the first 3 holes are pretty awesome, because you really, the first hole is a great intro to whoever's group you're going to start, because it's a dynamic tee shot. It's wide open. You get a really good approach shot. You go into the par 3 that's up. It's a challenging hole. The third hole is dicey because you don't get to see the tee shot. They put them all the way at the tips. Yeah. You just are looking at the tree going in. I think where the course for me as a spectator gets a little rough is when you go to 5 and now you got the double dog leg. And now as a spectator, do you want to wait for the golfer? Or are you trying to move up? So now you're not even watching the event. Now I'm starting to think as a patron, where do I want my best angle to see sight lines? 6, 7, 8, 9. They're all good golf holes, but I feel like it wasn't designed as a spectator with the spectator in mind at first. It was designed as a great golf course first. So those holes kind of move around, but the back 9 really strengthens. And I feel like 17 and 18, along with 15, are really strong finishing holes.
Yeah, I want to hit on a few things here. If you're going to come back to Silverado and watch this event, I would advise, you know, to hang out by number 11 green and 11 tee, because then you can see them hit onto that signature 3 par, which is over the water. It's a force carry over the water. That's a really dramatic hole. It's a par 3, plays about 189 yards. And then to your left is going to be number 18. So you're going to be able to see those guys tee off and hit down that really tight, you know, window, that fairway onto 18. And then as you go beyond number 11, you're going to see the 8th tee right there as they hit, you know, off that tee, the dogleg left over the creek. And then you're going to also see number 12 tee, which is just, you know, to your left. And then as you get up, you know, over there, you're going to be right by the 17th green and by the 7th tee. So there's a lot of activity right there by 7 green, by 17 green, 12 tee, 8 tee, 18 tee, and 11 green. So I think to answer your question, you know, when this golf course was put in, you know, years ago, and it first started hosting PGA Tour golf back in the late 60s, and the greats started coming here, like Jack Nicklaus and Tom Watson and Trevino and Johnny Miller and all the legends, the World Golf Hall of Fame members were here back in the 60s and 70s and 80s. I think it's a very, you know, as I said, there's tight windows out there. But what I love about it is that it's easy to walk and you can see a lot of shots in very close proximity, you know, but you have to find your spots on the golf course to see that. A lot of spectators tend to, you know, be over by number 11 green, number 11 tee, 18, you know, 18 green is a really beautiful hole because the players are hitting second shots onto that green and two. But what I was going to say, Luke, is that on Saturday and Sunday, this is what one of my big takeaways from this tournament. You know, last year there weren't any fans, didn't have any fans here at all because of the pandemic. So it was really quiet. It was kind of eerie, you know, to be out there. And so this year I heard the cheers and some really, really loud cheers. And I wasn't, you know, that really is one of my takeaways from this event, was hearing those big roars coming from the galleries, like on 18 and 17 and where the galleries were. And so, and you can, those reverberate all around that property. So you can, there's, I think those trees and that creek out there, it provides echoes. And so it really, that was exciting, you know, because I've never been to the Masters before and I haven't been to some of these big majors, but it was exciting to see the galleries really acknowledge and support these players and provide that kind of feedback in the way of cheers and roars and things like that, because that can be a big momentum boost right there for someone who thrives on spectators. And so it was great to see so many fans and that support and that, you know, excitement, you know, return after last year when there weren't any fans at all. And I was out there last year walking the golf course, and it was just volunteers, media, plus families, and very, very little in the way of cheering for the health and safety of the players.
Speaking of big crowds, no crowd was bigger than Phil Mickelson's crowd. I only saw the Phil show a little bit, but it was crazy to me how, even at this point in Phil's career, he's going to have the biggest crowds over John Rahm, who I walked a lot with Rahm because he's currently the number one player in the world. I walked with Hideki. It's like none of these players came anywhere near the crowds Phil Mickelson had all week.
Yeah, well, Phil is... You talk about one of the greatest in the game of golf, you know, a World Golf Hall of Fame member who's still playing competitive golf at 50, 51 years old, who won the PGA Championship at Kiawah Island in South Carolina on that challenging ocean course, and who is playing competitive golf on the PGA Tour Champions. I mean, this is a remarkable person, you know, one of the top 10 in the history of the game of golf, and a major winner at his age. And he was in contention. You know, he went into the final round, you know, within four shots of the lead. 20 players went into the final round of this tournament within four shots of the lead. And you're right, people, it was unfortunate, you know, and it was because of health and safety protocols that there weren't, you know, players were not able to sign autographs, but Phil every year has always stayed around and signed everyone's autograph, you know, and signed, you know, and stayed for pictures. He's the modern day Arnold Palmer. You know, he's the guy that people want to watch because he's got, you know, he's got the shots, he smiles, he acknowledges the spectators, he thanks the spectators. He's a brilliant, you know, person when it comes to that, you know. He's really he is such a credit to the PGA Tour.
I mean, I think that's always going to be the comparison, is Tiger Woods was the modern day Jack Nicklaus, maybe even went a little beyond, and Phil was Arnold Palmer. I mean, I think that's kind of like the way I will always look at it.
Yeah, we're hoping that Tiger can play, you know, PGA Tour golf again. I mean, the greatest in the world in the history of golf. I mean, Jack Nicklaus has the majors, and Tiger's, you know, pursuing that. But, you know, Tiger, I think, still has been trying to play this event, I think, because of his health and because of, you know, injuries and everything like that has prevented him from playing, you know, here over the years. He's had back surgeries and he's had, you know, knee surgeries and things that have kept him, you know, from playing at Silverado. But I wish him a speedy recovery as he comes back from his accident, you know, earlier this year. And I know he's not going to be able to be at Whistling Straits for the Ryder Cup, you know, but I, you know, I'm sure he's going to be in contact with Captain Steve Stricker and the team, and providing all the support he can for this USA team as they take on the European team at Whistling Straits. But you know, I would love to see Tiger play Silverado, because he's a Stanford guy. He's from California. And what happens when you put California guys and Bay Area guys, you know, on this golf course? They tend to be in contention. And I think, and it was a great tournament too, because of the, you know, the way the spectators, you know, were so, you know, into it here. They were, everyone was really into it. But this year to welcome back the players and to be back out on the golf course to watch, it was huge. For this. You know, when I left the clubhouse, Luke, after filing my story on Sunday, I thought to myself, how lucky are we in Napa to have a PGA Tour event in this small town? This is a very, very small town. It's like 78,000 people, and there's only 47 of these events, and they're spread out all across the country. There are several in the state of California, but this is a very, very small town. And thanks to Johnny Miller and his career on the PGA Tour and his place in golf history, you know, when Johnny and the other owners purchased Silverado, you know, 10, 11 years ago, I asked him at the time, I said, you know, can we expect to see PGA Tour golf, you know, back at Silverado? And he said, you know, give me some time on that, but I would love to do that. And he has brought the tour back to Napa.
So now I want to shift gears on my final one. You're an avid golfer. We're a big golf architecture fan on my platform.
Yeah.
Give us your three favorite golf courses that you think all people who love the game of golf should experience, and why?
Oh, that's a great, great question. You know, I really love the North Course of Silverado. You know, that's one of my top three favorites. It's just a fun course to play. You know, I never get tired, or, you know, it challenges me from tee to green all the time. I just love the golf course and the way it lays out and the way it sets up. And you've got to be able to, you know, hit fairways and hit greens. And, you know, I don't shoot par. I'm lucky if I can break 90, but I still enjoy it. I love getting out and playing. I love Gray Eagle Meadows golf course up in Plumas County. That's one of my favorite courses because it's a fun course to play. It sits at about 5,000 feet. It's in a beautiful area of the Sierras, and it's fun. It's exciting to play. It's got, you know, it's an older golf course. We try to go up there every year and play that one. I really love, you know, White Hawk Ranch, which is also up in the Gray Eagle area. It's in Clio, California, which is north of Truckee off of Highway 89. That's a favorite of ours. It's always been a fun course to play. It's just so beautiful. It's set in an area that is surrounded by mountains. And that's a great question, Luke, because I just love getting out and playing new courses. And for me, you know, it's just, it's almost therapeutic getting out there and playing, because you're not on your phone, you're not looking at your text messages or your emails. And so I just really enjoy everything about the game and being able to get my walk in. I walk the 18 holes, and I love the exercise and the fresh air, and all of that. But I would say the North Courts of Silverado, Gray Eagle Meadows, and White Hawk Ranch. Those are three of my favorites.
No, that's, I always like to ask people that, because like for myself, it's like, I remember playing Bandon Trails for the first time. And part of the reason I love that course is I didn't know what was ahead of me at any point. Like I'd never seen it on television. And I think sometimes people fall in love with golf courses from TV too much, because there's so many great golf courses out there. Like another one of my favorite ones that I'm going to play in a little bit is Spyglass out in the Pebble properties. And I love that course, but it's like Spyglass is a course where I feel like every 5 months I go back and play it, but I build up my game to see. It's like my, I think it's like the standardized test of golf for me. It's my SAT, where I go to Spyglass or Apostasiempo and then we see where I really am, because that's going to expose all my weaknesses. And like though, there's something special about having a relationship with a golf course that you're just very fond of.
Yeah, you're right. You know, you can walk away from a golf course feeling, you know, good about the way you were able to score or keep the ball in play or, you know, hit fairways or your, you know, greens in regulation. And there's just something magical about the game and the conditions and the type of things you see out there, you know, the things that, you know, that the challenges that the golf course presents. And it's very addictive, you know, to be out there, because you meet so many wonderful people. You meet the people that work on the golf course that are mowing and taking care of the grounds. And I always make sure to thank the superintendent, make sure to thank the staff. I find the people, you know, that are out there playing, or, you know, most people are really, really nice people you are paired up with. And I think everyone is very supportive. If you hit your ball off the fairway, they help you look for it. You know, you get a lot of support, you know, for a good shot. You know, it disconnects people, you know, it bonds people. And, you know, it really gives you so much back. We're so very fortunate in Northern California to have, you know, places like Spyglass and Pebble Beach. And, you know, my wife and I played a golf course this past summer, you know, on my birthday over in Santa Rosa, Sonoma County, Oakmont golf course over in the Santa Rosa area. And I'd always wanted to play that golf course because it's in a beautiful setting, you know, right there in Sonoma County, framed by these beautiful hills. And afterwards, we went over the Oakville Grade back into Napa County and had a late lunch over at the Rutherford Grill, which is a legendary restaurant in Napa County. And so it made for a great day, getting to play golf at Oakmont and then have a late lunch at Rutherford Grill. And that was really a lot of fun. But another course I want to play, you know, hopefully soon, is Northwoods, which is over in the Guerneville.
Monte Rio,
right, in Monte Rio, California. Have you played that one?
I love that course. I'm actually working on possibly trying to do a little feature on them, because I think it's probably the biggest hidden secret in all of golf. It's one of the most special places you can ever play.
Yeah, it's an Alistair McKenzie course too. You know, he only designed a few courses in California. Hagen Oaks, which is the McKenzie course. He designed a Cypress Point, you know, down in Monterey Peninsula, Pasatiempo, and Northwoods, Monte Rio. And also Meadow Club over in Fairfax, California, which is Marin County.
And Pebble Beach, like Minor Details, like the one that scares everybody. They're like, oh my God. You know, it's like Minor Details. They made one called Pebble Beach. That's like the most iconic golf course ever.
Yeah, that's, I've been fortunate to play Pebble just a few times. And it doesn't matter what I shoot out there. It's just being able to walk that course and see that golf course kind of unfold in front of you. It's like if there was, you know, if there's a heaven, I'm sure that's the course we're going to be playing in heaven, is Pebble Beach.
Back nine was like, the back nine there was way better than I expected. Like the back nine, actually, I left that course and I felt mentally fatigued. Like that's the first and only time I've played golf where I felt mentally tired more than physically tired.
Well, I think that's what Olympic Club does to you too, because Olympic Club is so very challenging, the lake course, that I think mentally, you've got to be mentally strong to handle, you know, the shots that it requires. You know, it's very, very challenging and very, very difficult day in and day out. And some, I think people thrive on that challenge. And it's, I've been very lucky to play that course a few times over the years. And, but we're so very lucky in this area to have so many great courses and so many opportunities and so many, and you know, I'll tell you, Luke, there are so many great players who come out of this Northern California area. I mean, legendary, you know, professionals and, you know, great amateurs and great juniors. I mean, junior tour golf in Northern California is, I covered a junior tour event at Napa Golf Course at Kennedy Park back in, I think it was early August. Junior Tour of Northern California. It's supported by the NCGA, and it's very, very competitive. I mean, these kids are from all over the place, and they shoot right around par, and they're young. They're ages 12 to 18. Well, at the end of the day, I'm talking to the champion of the girls division, the girls championship division, 12 years old, Asterisk Tally from Chowchilla, California, was your girls champion, and seventh grader, and just an outstanding swing, great young lady, perfect swing, you know, and they're getting younger and younger and better all the time, these junior players. It's I did a series of five stories for Morton Golf on the first tee of Greater Sacramento, and the Pure Insurance Championship is this week at Pebble Beach at Spyglass in Pebble Beach, and it's the first tee. They take the top 81 juniors around the country, and five of them are from first tee Greater Sacramento, and they're going to be playing at Pebble Beach and Spyglass Hill, and they all have A games. They're really, and it takes, you have to qualify and be selected based on your, you know, first tee experience over the years to play in this event. But it's a PGA Tour Champions event, so each of these juniors is going to be paired with a professional in their group, and that's how Cameron Champ, his career got started. Was he came out of first tee Greater Sacramento and played in that first tee event on the Monterey Peninsula. And what a great story Cameron has become. Three-time winner on the PGA Tour and from Sacramento. And man, so many of these juniors are coming out of the Sacramento area. Granite Bay, Rockland, Roseville, Sacramento. Austin Smotherman, who came out of first tee Greater Sacramento, he made the cut here at Silverado. He was on the Corn Ferry Tour last year and made the cut. Played Saturday and Sunday, and played at SMU with Bryson DeChambeau and Harry Higgs, and another young man from California. And so it's so exciting to see the future of golf happening, you know, so positively right now throughout Northern California. And this high school team from Granite Bay High School, girls golf team, outstanding. They got like an all-star team. And so they might be knocking on that door to get to the state championship and do something there. They've got one of the greatest teams right now in Northern California is right there at Granite Bay High School.
Well, that's really exciting. Now I'm going to start to pay attention to that. Marty, yeah. I don't want to take up your whole day. Can you let people know how to get a hold of you or how they can follow all your upcoming work if they enjoyed your appearance on this program?
Sure. Thank you, Luke. Yeah. My writing appears in the Napa Valley Register, and the website is NapaValleyRegister.com. It's a daily newspaper, 7 days a week. My editor, Andy Wilcox, and the editor, Sean Scully, and the staff, they do a great, great job, you know, publishing and, you know, producing this great community newspaper every single day. You can also read me at Napa Valley College Athletics, which is nvcstorm.com, Napa Valley College, nvcstorm.com. I do sports information work for Mr. Dunlap, Jerry Dunlap at Napa Valley College. And I also cover golf for Morton Golf, and that's at HaganOaks.com. And then I also have a blog on Medium.com, Marty James. And so, but I've been, I'm not ready to give it up yet, Luke. I'm ready to keep plugging away and writing as long as I can. And we'll see how long I can go, but I'm hopeful it's a few more years that I can keep doing this.
Well, I appreciate you, and I thank you for taking time and coming on the show.
Well, it's an honor, Luke, and anytime you need me, just reach out, and thank you for, you know, it was great meeting you and listening to these great questions and hearing your enthusiasm for the game of golf, and I wish you a great trip to Spyglass, and I hope you continue with this great podcast.
Man, that was really nice. I'm sure I will have a tear-filled scorecard from the tears that will hit the score sheet from from hitting into many sand traps, sand bunkers on that facility. But I'm just excited with this new endeavor. We all sometimes need new things to get us excited. And this is the first of many conversations I feel about local golf.
Yeah, well, I wish you all the best, and I'll look for your podcast. I see you on the internet and on Twitter all the time, and I'll look forward to following your podcast. It's very, very well done. Thank you for the opportunity, and I wish you all the best. Fairways and greens and regulation, and lots of looks at birdies on the greens.
Right on.